with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here it is, the 18th day of April, 2014. This is the Friday on the Front Porch edition. Good Friday, I guess one would call it, of the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find access to the chat room. I'm in there even as we speak. And hopefully you will, if you've never been there, now would be a great time to check it out. It's a lot of fun. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. Wait, I'm not in there. Yeah, I gotta hit the button first. Throw the third switch, Bob. Throw the third switch. Yeah, there we are. Okay. And you'll also find the pop-out player at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, as well as a selection of news of the day. I've been remiss in that this week because most of the days are spent away from the computer doing work, and of course the purpose of us being in D.C. is to work on the Appalachian Community's Health Emergency Campaign, which we all hope you will join in helping with as well, because that's how it's going to succeed. This is truly a grassroots effort, and it's how we're going to bring about an end to the monstrosity that is mountaintop removal and all the attendant horrors that it brings with us. But yeah, this is Good Friday. I don't know what's so good about it. There's something a bit macabre about celebrating the torture and death of another human being. But one of the things about Good Friday that I like to do personally is to remember the thousands upon thousands upon thousands of human beings who were also crucified and didn't get a religion out of it. Because they were. I mean, the Spartacus revolt alone resulted in just rivers of blood and gore in terms of retribution exacted upon the slaves who had decided they were not going to be slaves anymore. And so they deserve some remembering too. I was looking around earlier today just to see how many it was around 71 before the Common Era, when a number of former slaves led by Spartacus, Crixus, Enemas, Castus, and Gonicus went after the Roman Empire, fighting for their freedom. After the revolt was put down, Marcus Licinius Crassus, who would later have molten gold poured down his throat by a Parthian king, Marcus Licinius Crassus crucified 6,000 human beings. Yeah. none of whom got a religion, although Spartacus did get a Sand and Sandals movie made about it featuring Kirk Douglas. Kirk Douglas! $6,000 all along the Appian Way up the western coast of Italy. It is worth remembering. Caesar himself had a group of pirates crucified after they had held him hostage for a period of time as he was traveling through the Mediterranean. Crucifixion was an especially brutal statement on the part of Rome that it would not tolerate political dissent. It was reserved for people who were deemed to be traitors. And to venerate such a thing, oh, mercy. It's gross, and it's horrifying. And the crucifixion itself came to be meaningful within the early Christian religion because there was an early debate in the early church in which people who wanted to worship and follow the meaning of the life of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, were shouted down by people who wanted to worship his gory death, and who wanted, and instead of forming a cult, you know, and all religions begin as cults. Instead of forming a cult that would venerate the teachings, which for the time were fairly unique, of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi. Instead of venerating his life and his teachings, the death cult won out. And all of Christianity is an offshoot of that death cult in which the gruesome execution of a guy from the Palestinian hinterlands was turned into some sort of, myth. Hero myth. A hero myth. Was it Joseph Campbell who wrote the hero with a thousand faces, something like that? And so whoever got around to calling this Good Friday really didn't have a working appreciation for the agony involved in a crucifixion. It's not nice. And, of course, over the weekend, I'm sure we will be inundated on places like the History Channel and who knows where else, Discovery Channel perhaps, with so-called documentaries about how crucifixion works, what crucifixion is, and why one crucifixion is particularly noteworthy. So that's, you know, there's your Good Friday. Meanwhile, there are other things to discuss out there. One of which is, well, it feels like a little bit of a vindication. And we this being Friday on the front porch, we will hopefully begin the front porch aspect of the conversation in fairly short order, in about an hour's time, if you guys are interested. But there's that, and another one that's there's another thing out there that just kind of begs mention. And it is so unutterably stupid that it makes one reach for it's Excedrin. It's Excedrin headache number, Avogadro's number. The news broke today, and why it's shocking, well, I don't really know. In terms of our common humanity, it's about as unshocking as anything could possibly be. The news broke today that, lo and behold, Chelsea Clinton, daughter of Bill and Hillary Clinton, is pregnant. She got married a couple of years ago. When couples choose to reproduce, it is in almost every instance among humanity, followed by some sort of sexual reproduction. I mean, even if an adoption is involved, somebody had sex. Oh, wait, Good Friday. Never mind. But the absolutely unsurprising, completely expectable pregnancy of Chelsea Clinton has become yet another bête noire of the right wing. Dear God, rather than describe it, let us go to the tail of the tape, or the video file, or whatever we shall call it. Because this is kind of the kind of, if we did not know and understand wingnuts so well, we'd say, this is onion stuff. This couldn't possibly be, but it is.
Chelsea Clinton is having a baby. She announced it today, and lo and behold, Hillary was by her side. Hillary is going to be a grandmother and an expected grandmother and a grandmother while she runs for president. Now, pardon the skeptic in me. Oh, I could see Media Matters. I could see everybody going crazy on me now. Molesberg thinks that this was a staged, planned pregnancy? Well, now I'm not saying, when I say staged, I mean I have to believe she's pregnant if she says she's pregnant. I don't mean that they're making up she's pregnant, okay? But what great timing! I mean, purely accidental, purely an act of nature, purely just left up to God, and God answered Hillary Clinton's prayers. And she's going to have the prop of being a new grandma while she runs for president. It just warms the heart, brings a tear to my eye. It really does. Wow.
What a dick. Is it because the right wing in this country are conditioned to think of everything as some sort of function of political paranoia? Is it because the half-baked Alaskan, Caribou Barbie, Mussolini, Godzilla from Wasilla? Is it because Sarah Palin used her poor little infant as a stage prop and passed the poor baby around during the 2008 presidential campaign like it was a sack of potatoes? Is it because of that these disgusting right-wingers, Republicans, birthers, deathers, tenters, booger-eaters, igum-foos, birchers, libertarians, randians, and what have you, is that why they assume that there has to be some sort of nefarious plot involved with everything? Is that why a full-grown, married, you know, like they want the women's to be, a full-grown, married female, is that why this has to be something cynically done for the benefit of Hillary Clinton's presidential ambitions, even though she is not even an announced candidate. Jesus, what does this guy think happened? Somewhere in Mount Doom, Hillary Clinton was plotting with who? Gollum? A Balrog? Yeah, okay, let's see. We can announce the pregnancy on Good Friday, and that will associate my grandchild with the Christ child, and it can maybe we can argue that this is going to be a virgin birth. You know, I always wanted to be the grandmother of a god. Sometimes the stupid just seems a little bit too much to bear. Yeah, I think you may have a point, Tim. Tim from L.A. With a note asking, I wonder how many Republicans want Chelsea to abort her fetus. He asks, are douchebags like this Maltzberg guy on the air disappointed because, unlike Sarah, Chelsea is actually pregnant and not talking about abortion? So she's pregnant. Big deal. I mean, I thought this was the Kutcher of Life bunch. What the hell happened? Well, I mean, there's life and there's, you know, life. Yeah, you get the idea. Yeah, but still, this is, there's no end to it, is there? Birthers, deathers, tenthers, truthers. Right, so now we have a subset of Chelsea truthers. Because everything is some sort of nefarious plot. This goes back to America's truth detector with one half his brain tied behind his back. Give me some more of that oxy. It was a week or so ago, or a few days ago, that Flush Flimball, and there's a point to this. There's a progression that Flush Flimball got all paranoided up by the story of someone throwing a shoe at Hillary Clinton at an appearance in what, Las Vegas? Here you go.
Look, let me tell you, I can totally relate to people who think that everything the Clintons do is staged or choreographed. And I haven't seen it. I've got people telling me that her reaction wasn't natural. But I'm sorry, I'm ill-equipped to comment. I haven't seen it. No, I haven't cared enough to go try to find it. I really haven't. Somebody threw a shoe at Hillary. Big whoop. Maybe it's because in my subconscious I think it was staged or set up or whatever. I'm looking for it.
Now you understand why it went from point A to point B. That's twice. There's Steve Maltzberg with Chelsea's pregnancy. Staged. Now, what do I mean by staged? And then here you have the oxymoron using the very same word. Staged? Kind of depends on what you mean. The only thing that seems staged here is the fact that these lunatic jackasses will jump at anything. What? What? Hillary had orange juice for breakfast this morning? By God, that means she's going to destroy the economy of Florida, and only Jeb Bush can stop her.
I'm so, I just, I know these people so well that I, the one thing that I can probably attest, I just do not attach much genuineness to them at all. And I don't know why anybody would be throwing a shoe at Hillary unless, and maybe it's an attempt to make the Benghazi people look like nuts and lunatics and wackos. If
no, really, they don't need any help in that regard. They already are flush. You better chew up another one for the refreshing burst of flavor.
It has anything to do with that, which I don't know. But anyway, look, I appreciate the call. I got to take a brief time out again, folks, but we'll be back. There's always much.
Yeah, no. Thanks to the folks over at Media Matters for America for that. Yeah, somebody threw a shoe at Hillary, and naturally that is something that Hillary set up a conspiracy to have happen, because everybody knows you don't get any political cred in this country until footwear has been launched at you. Oh, for heaven's sakes. I mean, I have to believe she's pregnant if she says she's pregnant. And I don't mean they're making up she's pregnant, okay? But what great timing. I mean, purely coincidental, purely an act of nature. Well, see, maybe that's the whole thing. Maybe these loonies, these lulus, this crowd that you want to chase down with an oversized butterfly net, the purple crayon between the toes, writing on this very soft, soft walls types of the right wing. Maybe the derangement has gotten so bad that they think that I don't know that there's a secret underground Clinton cloning laboratory, or that little Clintons are grown in jars. Or if there's something like out of the Matrix. I mean, for heaven's sakes. How do these people have any power in the government of the United States if it is not the fact that there are a lot of people is as equally stupid putting them there? Yeah, nice note coming in from Shorty in L.A. Duh. Subject line, Chelsea, pregnant? What the? Duh. When you have intercourse without condoms or birth control pills, someone gets pregnant, usually the woman. I don't know, what do I expect next from maybe Flush? Remember how he wanted Sandra Fluck to send him videos of her having sex? You know, I like to watch. I like to watch, my friends. Ew. So maybe, I don't know, maybe Flush will, or Steve Malzberg, or the Beckerwood, or whomever. Maybe one of these goobs will now demand that some sort of archival video footage be provided showing that the conception took place in normal biological human terms, as opposed to the sort of crafted by Saruman in the Uruk Hai Orc laboratories. Crazy. Yeah. And we've got no small amount of it today. What else? Yeah, I'm sorry, that just stopped me in my tracks. How much stupid can one nation tolerate? Well, here's another example. This is, of course, one. Apparently, the Second Amendment Freedom Protecting Butchers Bill came due again Thursday afternoon. Alexandra Anita Santos of South Carolina was called upon to pay our Second Amendment butcher's bill yesterday. Alexandra Anita Santos was, emphasis on the word was, we're using the past tense here so you know how this works out, how this ends. Alexandra Anita Santos was 22 years old. She was driving a car yesterday afternoon. And in the car, as a passenger, she had a 6-year-old boy. She was not driving. Alexandra Santos wasn't. She was a passenger in the car. And the driver of the car had his or her 6-year-old son with them. And the 6-year-old son, being inquisitive, as 6-year-olds often are, began looking around in the automobile, and lo and behold, what did the 6-year-old boy find? He found a loaded handgun in the back seat of the car. Not in the back seat, it was on the rear floorboard. And the 6-year-old then took the handgun and proceeded to extract Alexandra Anita Santos's life from her. Jesus. You know, because if we don't have guns in cars, well, we don't have freedom. Thanks, NRA. Thanks ever so much. You know, the only thing that'll stop a bad 6-year-old with a gun is a good 6-year-old with a gun. And South Carolina was not settled by registered 6-year-olds. Note coming in from Texas Betsy. When you drive the grandbabies around, don't you keep a loaded handgun between the crayons and the pull toys? No. God. Well, you know, then again, freedom. Wolverines. Because I guess in some parts of the, I don't know, maybe in South Carolina, you do, you know, you've got the baby, but you know, you've got the bag with the toys and the snacks, and maybe you... And then maybe you've got a 380 semi-automatic handgun, you know, a little small one, you know, because they got little hands, the 6-year-olds. And, of course, it being South Carolina, the authorities say that they don't know who owns the gun. And they really don't know why it was on the rear floorboard of the automobile when the child found it and blew away 22-year-old Alexandra Anita Santos. I mean, this almost this has kind of a, Sopranos flavor to it. Alexandra Anita Santos was in the passenger seat of the car. The child was in the back seat. You got to wonder if the parent said, "Hey, kid, leave the gun, take the cannoli." Or it's South Carolina, maybe it's pralines. Oh well, somebody's got to pay our Second Amendment butcher's bill. Again, and again, and again, and again, and again. And again 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 and again. Because that's the thing about a Second Amendment butcher's bill. You never get the damn thing paid off. And you never know who's going to pay it next. I mean, I can tell you a little story. We were on our way to dinner on Monday night, the night before the funeral at Arlington we attended. And it was out in Fairfax. And so the dinner was scheduled for 6:30, so that meant leaving Capitol Hill and going driving in the nightmarish traffic of D.C. rush hour. And so we were toddling down U.S. Highway 50 when, which is variously known as Fairfax Boulevard, Arlington Boulevard, Lee Highway, and, oddly enough, U.S. 50. When a car pulls up as we're driving along, sort of, and we were slowing at a stoplight, and this sort of sketchy automobile pulls up, and a guy leans over and starts leans out the window and asks me, "Do I know where Cherry Lane is?" Or and I said, "No." Check the license plates. We're not from around here. And then he says, "Okay, well, do you know where?" And I forget what the other place was. And nope, don't know that either. And just because, and again, this is not to imply that the individual had any ill intent. This is just me recognizing that this here is America. And I simply recognized that this being America, and, you know, I mean, there was nowhere I could go. I couldn't step on the gas or step on the brakes and make anything happen in terms of my position relative to because traffic was stopped and it was rush hour. But, you know, the entire family in the automobile was thinking, I mean, we talked about it afterward. We were all wondering if dude was going to pull out a freedom protector and start squeezing off rounds at the Kincaid family conveyance. It did not happen, and maybe this says more about my own personal fears. But it can happen, because it does happen all over this land of protected freedom that's being protected by people who keep their handguns on the floorboard of the back seat of their automobile so the person in the front passenger seat can be blown away by a 6-year-old. Oh, Jesus. So here in a day or so, maybe it'll be tomorrow, the next day, kind of hard to say when, but at some point in time we will have ourselves another story of freedom protecting by the gun goobers. And, you know, you just have to deal with that. because
Wolverines.
Yeah, I don't have my reverb here. It doesn't really work nearly as well without it. I don't. What is there a remedy to this? Is there some way that we could make it less likely that six-year-olds will find a handgun on the floorboard of the back seat of an automobile and put a bullet through the skull of a woman who is riding in the passenger seat in front of the six-year-old boy? Is there something we could do to make? And is there a public policy argument that says either that the 22-year-old woman's life is more valuable or less valuable? Well, yeah, there is a public policy determination to be made, because that public policy determination has been made in this country, and that public policy determination is that, in fact, the 22-year-old woman's life is less valuable as a matter of public policy than the paranoid needs and probably paranoid, sexualized, fetishized needs of gun enthusiasts to have constant, almost unfettered access to handguns. Their fetishized gun needs have been deemed to be, as a matter of public policy, more important than the life of a 22-year-old woman riding in the front passenger seat of an automobile. Well, I mean, hell, Bob, I mean, she was in a car. She could have died in a car wreck. Well, sure. And of course, there will be no meaningful dialogue out of this. Well, you know, in a free country like ours, these things just kind of happen. I mean, you're either going to have these things or you're going to have dictatorship. You reckon that 22-year-old woman, you reckon she wanted to live in a dictatorship? Of course she didn't. Nobody wants to live in a dictatorship, and that's why we got to have guns. And sometimes the tree of liberty must be watered with the blood of patriots and tyrants, for it is its natural manure. And see, that's what Ms. Santos, 22 years old, was. She was the manure of freedom. Let us pray. Almighty Heavenly Father, thank you so much for giving us the Holy Sacred Second Amendment and the holy sacred firearms that help that make this the greatest country in the world. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Lord. Thank you. We hope you'll be nice. We hope you'll be extra nice to Sister Anita there in heaven, and forgive all her sins, and give her a harp and a halo and her very own cloud to sit there and pluck them on through all eternity. Amen, amen. God bless the Second Amendment. Thank God for American freedom. Jesus, it's too much. But, you know, there'll be another one. There'll be another one of those stories tomorrow or the day after. Or the day after that or day before yesterday. By the way, at least we can say that one of those finer points of the law kind of things, but we can say with some certainty that the 6-year-old boy who shot Ms. Santos was incapable of forming a homicidal intent. He lacked what the law calls mens rea, criminal intent. That's not the same, or that's not necessarily so in other circumstances. You know by now the account of Fraser Glenn Cross, who was just gut-bent by his vicious racism and anti-Semitism, such that he went and murdered three people out in suburban Kansas City earlier this week. Yeah, he ran a racist website. Their slogan was "No Jews, just right."
What?
Well, it turns out he had posted like 12,000 messages on that site. Oh well. The Southern Poverty Law Center has released a report. You can find it over at splcenter.org. splcenter.org. And they do tremendously good work there. And they found out something interesting about Stormfront. Stormfront is a neo-Nazi white supremacist website. It's simply vile. And the Southern Poverty Law Center analyzed activity related to Stormfront. The author of the SPLC report is Heidi Barrich, B-E-I-R-I-C-H. Oh, God. Apparently, Stormfront is a place where, according to this report, almost 100 people have been murdered in the last 5 years, roughly 20 people per year, by frequent visitors to Stormfront. Stormfront calls itself the voice of the new embattled white minority. Okay. And Ms. Barrich says it has been a magnet for the deadly and deranged. Who's been a Stormfront participant? Why, look there. There's Wade Michael Page. Back in 2012, Wade Michael Page killed six people at a Sikh temple in Wisconsin before he blew his own brains out. And then, of course, there is, Stormfront has an international quality to it, an international following. Anders Behring Breivik. He massacred 77 people in a bombing and shooting spree in Norway and at a summer youth camp. You know, some of them were children. The owner of Stormfront is a creep by the name of Don Black. Irony. And he said, "We're obviously a big website, and any site is likely to have a few unstable people pass through. Facebook, Twitter, and particularly Craigslist have had their share. Like all good propaganda, it's a mix of truth, half-truth, and outrageous lies." That's what he had to say about the SPLC report. Fraser Glenn Cross was banned from Stormfront in 2005. Gee, why was Fraser Glenn Cross banned from Stormfront? Was it because he posted things that were just too hateful for Stormfront? Too vile, too vicious, too nasty, too filthy, too bloody, too sick? No. No, Fraser Glenn Cross got banned from Stormfront because he testified at trial against some other white supremacists to save his own hide. Hmm. Ms. Barrich noted, these killers are really hiding in plain sight on these forums. Does Kansas have the death penalty? Don't know. Go figure. But by all means, freedom's got to be protected. And just remember, these Stormfront gun owners, they're freedom protectors. They're freedom protectors just like, and they're all, until they go and commit murder, they are each and every one of them a lawful gun owner. Doesn't that give you the chills? Because it doesn't make me feel real comfy. Jack in Shreveport pointing out, subject line, goons, that's spelled G-U-N-Z. The thing with the Second Amendment liberties is that it's selfish. Just like you were mentioning, the gun goobers put their rights way ahead of the rights of the lives of everybody else. Well, that's because everybody else is just natural manure. I really wish Tom Jefferson hadn't put it that way, but, well, we don't get to choose now, do we? No, I guess not. So this is, by the way, Friday on the Front Porch, and I want to thank Michael for helping us out in a big way with fundraising just a few minutes ago. Thank you very much, Michael. We try to raise $150 on any given evening, and Michael just took care of two-thirds of that. If anybody would like to help Michael with the other $50 of this evening's fundraising, you're more than welcome to. And for that matter, help us catch up a little bit with last night. Thank you very much in both instances. It is how we keep all of this going. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, is the traditional mail address. And if you prefer to use that, just send me an email. Send me an internet. Thank you, Ted Stevens. It's not a big truck. Send me an email, bobkincaid@gmail.com, and let me know that you're sending something in the mail so that I can tell Boss Man Wayne to keep be on the lookout for it, and he won't have to wear his spider-proof gloves when he reaches in the mailbox. And maybe there'll be something there besides the echo. So thank you, whichever way you help out. Remember, if you're going to do the traditional mail thing, checks and money orders should never be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but rather should be made to the Horn. And the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. And again, thank you for keeping this whole effort going for low these many, many years. Yeah, going on 10 years now. Just got a note in from Shorty in L.A. Over at the Harvard School of Public Health, here's an article I'm sure it doesn't make the NRA happy. Oh, by the way, as we were driving along, I think we were coming back from Arlington, saw a vehicle, a truck, and what was the bumper sticker that was on it? 3 million self-defense firearms uses per year. Guns save lives. Which is, of course, an entirely BS made-up statistic promulgated probably by the filthy liars over at the National Rifle Association. But tell Anita Santos, Alexandra Anita Santos, tell her that guns save lives. No, this is interesting. Harvard School of Public Health writes, we performed reviews of the academic literature on the effects of gun availability on suicide rates. The preponderance of current evidence indicates that gun availability is a risk factor for youth suicide in the United States. The evidence that gun availability increases the suicide rates of adults is credible, but is currently less compelling. Most of the disaggregate findings of particular studies, handguns are more of a risk factor than long guns. Guns stored unlocked pose a greater risk than guns stored locked, are suggestive but not yet well established. Across states, more guns equals more suicide. Across states, more guns equals more suicide, part two. States with higher levels of household gun ownership had higher rates of firearm suicide and overall suicide. This relationship held for both genders and all age groups. They analyzed it over time. They analyzed it via cross-section. They analyzed it in terms of relationship between firearm availability over a 10-year period with controls in there for poverty and urbanization in every age group all across the United States, and people in states with many guns have elevated rates of suicide. Wow. Oh, there's a good bit of data here. Gun owners do not have more mental health problems than non-gun owners. No, they just have guns. Yeah. Mercy. Where'd the tinkling piano come from? Never mind. No, this is something that just came in, and you're going to love it. The American sickness is spreading. Our good friend Fancy just sent this in Arizona. Our buddy Robert in Australia will be promptly beginning to scream. Get the duct tape and the tennis ball out, please, Robert. Who knew that there was an organization called Australians for Coal? I really can't do the hillbilly accent with that, can I? Australians for Coal. No. Let's check in with them. Because, guns kill people, coal kills people. Same.
As a company, we have an absolute commitment to the principle of action on climate change. We're very...
This is the CEO of an Australian coal company. Where's the tequila? Do, Tim, please tell us your policy on climate change. It isn't real. Just ask Tommy Abbott.
Proud of our values.
But as one of the major contributors to CO2 emissions, and as we begin to contend...
By the way, the Australian coal mining company CFO is Birgit Eichmann. That's who's speaking now.
And with the real-world effects of climate change, we have to prepare ourselves for the next step in addressing our corporate responsibilities in this area.
While the steps on the surface seem to be in opposition to our self-interest, the reality is, however, that they are actually in opposition to our self-interest.
So we recognise what we call the gap.
The gap is the problem of simultaneously holding two contradictory positions. On one hand, to act on our responsibility to humanity, but on the other hand, to deliver on our commitment to superior value for our shareholders. We needed to take a leap of faith.
An intuitive step outside of the limitations of science-based argument.
I'm proud to announce the company's new policy of fuck you.
Oh, Oh, this is lovely. That one just sneaks up on you, doesn't it? This is, of course, parody. Oh, thank you, Fancy. Oh, let's find out about this new policy.
Fuck You is more than a policy. It's a philosophy where we're able to straddle the dichotomy between what we know is true and how we can benefit by ignoring that truth. Fuck You means we can be passionate about our values, but not act on them.
Fuck You takes what would be our present-day financial burden away from us and transforms it into a chronic, economic, social, cultural, and political crisis for future generations.
The genius of this, however, is that we transferred it away from us.
It ensures solid returns to our shareholders by killing their grandchildren.
With this policy, we delay action and leverage the gap, and are able to maintain our role as a global leader in destroying the planet.
Ultimately, this is a reflection of the values of our shareholders. Everyday Australians have chosen to invest $20 billion into the company. But we prefer to think of it as 20 billion fuck yous to the Australians of tomorrow.
There will come a day when my moral choices will no longer be beholden to the shareholders. And a wave of profound regret and a sorrow will engulf me as I realise with painful clarity the enormity of the damage I have perpetrated upon humanity. And even if I plead with whoever has succeeded my role in the company to stop putting CO2 in the air for the sake of my daughter's grandchildren, he or she can turn to me and simply respond with, "Fuck you." And that legacy really does make me very proud.
To find out more, Australian cult. Let me back up, make sure I get this right. Oh, hold on. I didn't need that cord. There it is. australiancoalminingcompany.com.au/thegap/fuck you. Yeah. australiancoalminingcompany.com.au. That is a brilliant little piece of satire. And really isn't, you know, we've come up with a number of slogans over the years here among the Horn Family Commune congregation, and they want it all because money. But in the end, whether it's guns or coal or fracking or whatever the profit monsters are doing most recently to satisfy their ravenous shareholders, it really does kind of all boil down to, to that. Fuck you. Fuck you, future. Fuck you, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, children undreamt of. Fuck you, world. Yeah. Still a great deal of stuff to talk about, and a reminder that this is, of course, Friday on the Front Porch. And if you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch, feel free to send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and join in. Join in the Friday roundtable conversation. You know, this is a heck of a lot better roundtable than the stuffed shirt millionaires who show up on the for-profit TV, because, you know, we're real. They're not. So hopefully we will be pulling that together In fairly short order, we're going to take a brief break, and just because, well, sometimes the media player doesn't work quite as well as I would like, there won't be any music for a couple of minutes. Instead, the stream will continue to stream, but we'll go dark and get, hopefully, I'll check in with Sparky, and we'll hopefully get Friday on the Front Porch going here in a very few minutes. That, or I'll fill a Bobster. Either way is fine. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. And we are back. This is hour number two of Friday on the Front Porch, the 18th of April, 2014. I'm Bob Kincaid, and we have the Front Porch group all assembled. Good evening, one and all.
Hi, Bob. Somebody's got an echo.
Don't think it's me.
Fritz?
Hello.
Okay. I don't hear an echo on this end, Sparky.
Okay,
go ahead.
Hang on. It's me.
Oh, no. You're not going to ban yourself, are you?
No.
Not going to kick yourself off the island?
No, I screwed up.
but we have with us this evening, of course, Sparky, who is the longtime moderator of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. We have Waggy. Larry is with us. Fritz is with us from Arkansas, Stan. And Sergi is with us. Good evening, one and all.
Hello, hello.
Hello there.
Sergi's having some problems, I think.
Well, hopefully they will sort out in due time. It's good to see you in the group, Fritz.
Well, thank you.
Any particular bees under bonnets or burrs under saddles?
Oh, not particularly today. Other than our little festival tonight and tomorrow night, it's year that we have every year in town, is again booked all the little rap country, new country acts instead of a diverse lineup of acts.
So that's this weekend?
Yes, it is.
So who's on the bill?
Tonight it's the Georgia Boys, and then followed by the Lax, and that's sort of the redneck version of rap music.
Oh, dear God. Do I want to know any more?
No, I've seen a couple of their videos, and that was all I needed to know about them.
And that's why Fritz is staying home this evening.
Well, my little fair sec town is overrun with cowboys for the rodeo.
Oh, is it rodeo time?
Yeah, it's a 93rd Red Bluff Roundup.
Oh, wow, 93rd.
Mm-hmm. Got a history.
It sounds like. You know, I was looking, I was in a congressional office the other day, and I saw, you know, when you walk into these things, there's usually some sort of coffee table book there that has something to do with the district, and it was a history of Florida cow culture, basically 500 years of it. And you know how you mentioned that there in town, Sparky, you've got a cowboy church? Well, I found reference in that book to Cowboy Church in Florida. So apparently it's not just a Red Bluff thing.
Well, I think it's an abandoned storefront just down the highway. I forget what was in there to begin with. The rent was probably cheap on it.
Well, I don't know. I guess they've got their own liturgy, or I don't. Who knows? But it was the book itself was fascinating. But I couldn't help noticing mention of that, and I guess it's a thing in cattle culture. And of course, mm-hmm. Clive and Bundy probably notwithstanding.
Yeah, well, I don't think my neighbor goes to this church. He usually has big get-togethers on Sunday out at the ranch.
Well, that sounds like fun. Oh, by the way, every now and then there's a little surprise out there. Anybody notice that that Harry Reid, the normally mild-mannered Senate Majority Leader, actually referred to Clive and Bundy and the people who came out with their freedom protectors and set up sniper positions on the highways and stuff out in Nevada? He actually referred to them as domestic terrorists.
Yeah, and Fox News is having a hissy.
Oh, are they? Why am I not surprised?
I forget whose show he was on last night. And old Bunny said, well, if he wants to call me that, I guess I am.
Good. We can use that at the trial. Oh, brother, the hilarity is already happening in the chat room, referencing Cowboy Church. In the Cowboy Church, seldom is heard a discouraging word. Yeehaw! Oh dear. Yeah, didn't it? Yeah, I just noticed in the chat room, Harry Reid made a point of clarifying that he was not referring to Cliven Bundy and the birth or death or tenth or bag or booger eater types that came out there as domestic tourists, that they are, in fact, domestic terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
God.
Oh, we will have the full regalia of people on horsebacks with flags and all that kind of stuff to open the rodeo, I'm sure. And if they should happen to do a flyover tonight, you might hear it.
Oh, wow.
Last year they had F-18s from Nevada come over, do a flyover. And they come right over the top of my backyard.
Pretty low, too, I imagine.
Oh, real low. You'll hear it if it happens between now and the show end.
Wow. Speaking, and by the way, something you posted, was it you that posted it on my Facebook page, Sparky, about the water being flushed out of the reservoir in Portland?
Yeah. Now the guy says he didn't pee in it. The skateboarder, he said I didn't pee on it. He peed on a wall.
Oh, well, okay. No, because
if you look at the surveillance video, you could tell he was peeing because you see him zip up his fly.
So this is that. The first thing I thought of was that video you had sent me previously about the reservoir near you that's made up of runoff from, you know, from melted snow. And I guess this is something similar to that?
I think this might be, or just it's already processed water. I didn't read through the whole story. I watched the video.
But apparently the water company is flushing 38,000 gallons of the water away because this guy took a whiz in the reservoir. And, you know, some things come immediately to mind, like, you know, how, you know, they're overreacting. But,
don't
you know,
fish pee in water all the time?
Well, see, there you are, Sergi. You've got an appreciation for comedy, because the first thing I thought of was W.C. Fields, who, being invited to go swimming in some lake in California, refused, and they asked him why, and he said, fish pee in that.
And birds crap in it, and animals crap and pee in it, other animals. And humans do. I mean, you know, a bit about North Texas. Every lake in North Texas is man-made. In fact, every lake in Texas, is the whole state except one, is man-made. Pretty much all of them are reservoirs for some cities drinking water. And, you know how many times I've passed by a lake and seen somebody taking a leak in it?
Yeah, human urine is pretty much harmless when you put it in a lake or a reservoir or something. However, they will do stuff like this just because of the public perception.
Well, and it's also, Waggy, you know, kind of proactive. I mean, I wish we had people, say, at the West Virginia American Water Company who were that concerned about the water supply. Because that was the first thing I thought of when I read the story was, hey, look, you know, they're concerned about a guy taking a whiz in the reservoir. Meanwhile, West Virginia American Water didn't even know that there were tens of thousands of gallons of God knows what kind of poison a mile and a half upstream from the water intake.
But isn't the difference that this got out on a video on the Internet? It probably happens a dozen times a day, and the folks who work there know about it and don't, you know, put it on the web.
Well, thanks to Homeland Security, most water treatment plants have security cameras.
That's it. Yeah, and you know what? That's a decent idea.
The one I helped build was unmanned at night, so they had security cameras on the water treatment part of it, and around to look, being able to look at the buildings and the road coming in and that kind of thing. I think we had four cameras that you could see everything around the plant with.
Well, it's probably, in the long run, it's probably a pretty good idea. I remain stunned at the whole, Freedom Industries disaster, just because of the level of who gives an F that was involved in all of that. And even still, I saw a news story earlier today. Freedom Industries lawyers are saying they want $1.8 million in the bankruptcy proceedings. They want to get out in front of all the people who got poisoned, all the people who have claims against Freedom Industries. The lawyers are going to get paid first in the want to get paid first in the bankruptcy. Jesus.
Isn't that the way it always works?
Apparently so, but it's still mighty frustrating.
Yeah, that one video you were talking about, that was Huell Hauser. He did a series called California Gold.
Mm-hmm.
And he traveled all over the state, and then, he was in, I hope you watched the whole thing.
Oh, I did.
But anyway, he went to the intake with a glass and took a drink right out of the water coming off the mountain.
And, the icy creek that people were jumping into?
Oh, that's headwaters of the McLeod River. I've actually swam in that place years ago. I went there with a girlfriend, and we jumped in and climbed out that ladder. That ladder's been there for forever. I mean, you can't miss it. If you go up there, people will tell you where it's at. You can go see it.
Well, I mean, it was a charming town, and God, the landscape is just gorgeous.
That railroad doesn't run anymore, though.
Oh, really? The one that they...
Yeah, the people that owned it went broke.
Mm.
They had a dinner train on that, too. But that ended a few years ago.
And what's the name of the town again?
McLeod.
McLeod, yeah.
It's on the south side of Mount Shasta. And on the north side, there's a town called Weed, which does have a bottled water plant.
But McLeod turned down the, Nestle?
Yeah, they got kicked Nestle out. They said they didn't want it.
Well, see, and that's the larger story out of the Portland thing, is that eventually we're going to wake up to the fact that this stuff really, that our, our supplies of fresh water are more precious than we know. And, well, I mean, you'd think maybe we'd figure that out from this past January in Charleston. But maybe not.
Oops, there's Roger.
Hey, Roger.
Hello. Hello, how's it going?
You got kind of a bad connection.
Yeah, let me hang up and come back in and try again.
Okay.
Okie doke. Now, let's see. I had a stack of stuff. Some breaking news, and I hope this is not satire. This coming in from Americans Against the Tea Party. It's not the whole thing. Duck Doofus live stage show for Springfield, Missouri, has been canceled. And the reason given is, quote-unquote, unforeseen circumstances. It turns out the unforeseen circumstances were the fact that they weren't selling any tickets. Nobody wanted to come see them.
It's just...
Now, get this. Let me juxtapose this with something else real quick. I found out today by, I just saw a poster out on the street. Here in D.C., the D.C. Shakespeare Theater Company is putting on the Shakespeare plays, the first part of Henry IV and the second part of Henry IV. And tickets run from $20 all the way to $110, I think. And I would, I saw that, and I particularly wanted to take Ferg just because of the subject matter of 1 Henry 4 and the character of Prince Hal and all of that. It ain't going to happen. But get this. Okay, so a Shakespeare play in Washington, D.C., will run you some tickets for 20. Most of them are 50, 80, and 110. Well, this Duck Doofus show in Springfield, Missouri, tickets were on sale for $37, $50, and $58. And I guess it's kind of a false dichotomy on my part, but somehow or another, really, $58 what does that get you? Front row seats where you can see the individual specks of dinner in Phil Robertson's beard.
You can almost feel the tobacco juice falling right on you.
Yeah, thanks, Ferg. Yeah, Ferg says you can almost feel the tobacco juice falling right on you. God, that's kind of a disgusting take on Gallagher, isn't it? Ugh. So, too bad, Duck Dynasty... the live show. What is that? I mean, do they stand on stage and honk on their duck calls or something?
I'd pay to see that.
Well, that certainly was worth $58.
I had to mute because I didn't laugh.
Well, I'm glad to get the laugh. Thanks for at least letting me know. It sounds like Roger might be on the road or out by the highway.
It's still bad, Roger.
I had the microphone up. Let me turn the microphone off so I can listen.
You're getting better.
Yeah, I think that's because he turned the microphone off.
Well, I was standing inside the garage because I'm out picking asparagus for tomorrow's market.
Oh, rub it in. Really, it's asparagus time out there?
Oh, yeah. I already picked the artichokes. Now I'm just moving my little tablet out to put it on the stand so I can pick asparagus and listen and talk to you while I'm working.
Oh, wow. I guess it's soft shell crab season here in D.C. I've seen those on a number of menus around here.
So is the audio okay?
Yeah, you're much better now.
Fine now. Oh,
okay, fine. I'm standing outdoors. You know, that works. So I'll keep flipping the mic and the rest of that and listen. And when I decide I have something to say, I'll pop it down and go because Sparky turned me on to this beautiful headset.
They work great, don't they?
Oh, yeah, they're fantastic.
Oh, is that the Plantronics headset?
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta find one of those for Agnes at some point.
Would she like a headphone with a mic?
She's doing some online distance learning, and I think it calls for something. Yeah, it calls for one of those.
Oh, okay. I'll send you the info on the one I got if you don't have it.
Oh, cool. I'd appreciate that.
And Tim is here.
Oh, hey, Tim.
Hey, Bob.
How's it going?
元気です。いかがですか?
What he said.
Arigato. Yeah, I'm fine. How are you?
Yeah, I was going to say arigato, I think.
yeah.
Oh, by the way, Roger mentioned asparagus, and Jack in Shreveport immediately clued in on that. Somebody's doing something on their asparagus? Yeah, just don't, Roger, just don't cast any aspersions on the asparagus, and you'll be fine. Because if you do, Louis Gohmert's going to get all kinds of 16 shades pissed off.
I pick about 7 to 10 pounds a week.
Wow, how much of the stuff? How much of the stuff do you have growing there?
I got about 8 30-foot rows.
About 8 30-foot rows. Wow. My colleague Bo left something in the refrigerator here when he moved out and we moved in. I'd never seen it before. He left me a jar of pickled asparagus. And, oh, my God, is that stuff good.
Well, I make pickled asparagus, sell it at $10 a quart jar.
Yeah, I'd never had it before. This was just wonderful. Oh, hey, Sparky, I've got a question coming in from Randy. He wants to know if the Plantronics headset is Mac compatible, if you know.
If you got a USB port.
Okay.
It works off a dock.
I second that. It works on that.
It works off
a... As long as you got the USB port, all you got to do is plug it in and it works.
Doesn't Larry have one?
Yes, he does.
It's Mac compatible.
And so, Randy, there you have your answer. Thanks, guys.
Put your mic up, Roger. You're... You can hear road noise and stuff.
Dwayne just sent something along, and I wanted to just get your thoughts on this. Did you see this Princeton study in the last week or so? I saw it bouncing around Facebook a good bit. The Princeton, you know, this is from TPM. Princeton study, U.S. no longer an actual democracy. Anybody else see that?
Yep.
The argument being made that over the past few decades, the political system...
Hey, Roger, you're going to have to mute, buddy. I'm going to have to turn you off.
Yeah,
I have my microphone up.
Yeah, a lot of noise. I hate that, but anyway, what I was getting at, they're arguing the authors of the report, based on an analysis, oddly enough, from 1981 to 2002, beginning with Reagan, and you know into the first year of Bush. Martin Gillens and Benjamin Page posit the argument that the American political system is transformed from a democracy into an oligarchy. And that comes as no great surprise to me, or probably to anybody in the Horn family. But the thing that threw me is, what made them think it was a democracy in the first place?
Maybe they thought of it as a limited democracy, or that they believe that the influence of the people were greater. It's always been a constant struggle between those with power and the public. It's been that way since the beginning of this country and before the Declaration of Independence. Maybe they are optimists. Maybe it's just the terms that they use. I like to say one of the big problems is people can say a simple word such as democracy, and to different people it means radically different things.
Well, maybe that's what it is, because I can't find, at least my understanding of the word democracy will suggest that this country is not now, nor has it ever been, even anything even remotely resembling a democracy. You know, Dr. Bill indicates, and does so brilliantly, you know, part of the reason the Constitutional Convention was called in the late 1780s is because democracy was breaking out all over the place, and it had to be stopped.
Well, we are normally set up as a republic, and it seems like the fight for democratic rights has had a ton of resistance. And I was reading a book by Washington Post columnist E.J. Dionne, which has a section which looks at the Supreme Court rulings on Bush v. Gore. We had people like John Yoo of the torture memo fames arguing that it's really the states that have the power to choose the electors, not the voters. So that's been an attitude we've had to contend with since the beginning. I mean, we can, in our best moments, we move towards a democracy, but our system of government is set up to be a very difficult to change conservative republic. Is there any logical reason why the state of Wyoming, which has fewer people than parts of the greater Chicago area, has the same political power as California, New York, and Illinois in the Senate? It was meant to be in many ways a compromise document, and to my mind is far from perfect. And I think if we should tell ourselves that if we want to make the country more democratic, we can. We've seen progress. It's been hard-earned, often bloody. Just ask the people who fought for women's suffrage and the Civil Rights Act. But I've had no illusion that for a very long time the rise of money has increased. We are at Gilded Age 2.0, and I heard one of the persons behind the study on Randy Rhodes with Nicole Sandler filling in, and I think we should have no illusions that we are in for an easy fight. This is going to be hard. The next few years may determine what sort of country we have, either one that moves towards a more democratic form of government or even more oligarchical, where essentially it's just a few rich people calling the shots.
Well, I go back to American origins, Will, and I think you state your case very, very cogently. But how can we even remotely reference democracy when, in point of fact, the Senate, which you reference, which is probably one of the most undemocratic institutions in the entire country, if not the most undemocratic, the Senate was set up the way it was, and it's another one of those pernicious legacies of slavery.
Yes.
The slave states had to be able to have some way to make sure that the rest of the country could not get an attack of conscience and suddenly take away their ability to own other human beings. And if you look at it that way, and if you take into account the fact that this country was founded, as far as the Constitution is concerned, on a principle that some people living in this country were actually only a fraction of a human being. Well, I think at that point in time, you have to consider that any democratic or democracy-oriented notions were kind of smothered in the crib, if you know what I mean.
Yes, and we see the same thing with ancient Athenian democracy, as we call it, because really it was only a relatively small percentage of the population that could be called to public service. And, however, I think that what has been the positive side of this country is that despite these limitations, we've made progress. It's just that now we have the moneyed interests pushing back as hard as they can with five justices who essentially do their bidding.
You know, I was walking past the Supreme Court earlier today, and I told Ferg I said, I would love to make a big sign and take a and just take a picture of it, and maybe it could get some legs out in the interweb tubes. Just a big sign that says, "The Supreme Court is infested with rats." Roberts, Alito, Thomas, Scalia.
You do know that this that is an insult to a certain species of rodent, Bob.
You know, you did that very dryly, Will. I almost spit took on the monitor. It's very good.
But, again, this is the key problem, because I recall seeing an article, I think I mentioned it before, from the New York Times, I believe September 2013, titled, the Big Business has a friend in the Supreme Court, and most of the rulings favor the corporations. We have corporations considered people in legal doctrine. So, Bob, can you think of a class of person, real or fictitious, that is immortal, that is can't be punished for its crimes, that essentially can't be killed, and feeds off of others? Dick Cheney has been called one, but I believe he's more of a cyborg than that
category. Oh, you mean a vampire?
Yes. So essentially, what our Supreme Court has done is, whereas once we had a class of persons, well, several classes, the African Americans and Native Americans.
Women.
And women who were, and pretty much anyone who was not tolerated by the majority, being less than a person, we now have an artificial construct, a corporation, as being a legal creature which has more rights than the average person. Bob, may you live a long time, but I do not think you will effectively live forever. And if you get a speeding ticket, you have to get prosecuted. Whereas if a corporation commits bank fraud to the tune of $10 billion, they just pay a fine. No one goes to jail.
Right. I mean, and in a way, the only exception to that I can come up with, Will, watching this whole Cliven Bundy thing unfold. This guy's got hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars in fines and fees that he hasn't paid, and he just walks? I mean, you'd think he was a corporation or something.
Well, he is a very wealthy individual who owns a lot of cattle, and he has been let go for too long, and I fear the implications of this crisis, if it is not dealt with, simply because it will send a signal to all the people that Mark Potok of the Southern Poverty Law Center has called sovereign citizens, that, yes, you can defy the federal government, and that will lead to even more nutcases going out of the work. For my Passover Seder this Tuesday, we had to have an officer, which my congregation hired, and a password, which I will not reveal, which was put on paper on the dashboards of people's cars. We have a great problem in this country. There has long been a struggle for equality and those opposing it. And those opposing it are terribly scared, because they see demographics working against them. Even the Koch brothers are scared, because they know sooner or later there will be enough of a reaction from the public. When, I don't know. But they are afraid. They are afraid that the common people who were disparaged by John Adams and many of our other founding fathers will rise up and feel that they are strong. And that explains everything from gerrymandering to cutting voting hours to voter IDs and other forms of suppression. Also explains why labor rights are something that's so strongly opposed, because how dare workers presume that they have a voice at the table? I think We have always struggled with who we are because we have two radically different views, a more Jeffersonian view where we should strive towards equality, and one that is more of a, let's continue the English aristocracy on our side of the ocean. And this is still a crisis we're fighting.
Hey, Roger. Roger.
Bob?
Yeah.
Right, but Bob, have I erred in my analysis? Because I think we really have such vast differences in our traditions. It's as if it's kind of like how I view Wisconsin. Wisconsin has this wonderful tradition of progressives like Bob La Follette, and also gave us McCarthy.
Yeah.
We're kind of schizophrenic.
Well, no, I think your analysis is solid, Will. And the problem with the fact that it is solid is the question of how in God's name do we remedy it? I mean, I get stuff in my email, you know, sign this petition to overturn Citizens United. Sign that petition about McCutcheon. The fact of the matter is, we've got, and I don't know, even among progressives, Will, you tell me, do people understand how bad it really is? And I'm not trying to, you know, bust out all nihilist or anything, but it's real easy to take a look at the situation we're in and think that the entire governmental structure of the United States is irretrievably broken.
It is easy to see that because we've had moments when we've been there. The Gilded Age being one, the 1920s being another. And yet what I think will happen, and this is because I still have faith in the American people as a whole, is that we will have people get organized around issues. We will have mass movements. We will get allies in elected office and elsewhere and be able to change things around. But let's not kid ourselves. It's going to be a hard fight.
Well, I think we will
be called traitors. We will likely have people beaten as we're at Occupy Wall Street. And I would not be shocked if a few political candidates and others are killed along the way.
Nor would I. But I think, for instance, historically, you know, you mentioned the Gilded Age. Well, it takes a while for that worm to turn, and that happens after women's suffrage becomes a fact. And it's not long after women's suffrage that you get FDR. FDR was not just a product. FDR's presidency was not just a product of the Depression. It was also a product of a significant increase in the voter base, don't you think?
Yes, and this is why voter suppression is so key to the desires of the Koch brothers and the GOP, which essentially I like to see as courtiers to the new would-be feudal lords. If you limit the voters, if you make people disinterested, you do not have opposition. And I think what we are beginning to see in places like North Carolina with Moral Monday, we saw it with the Occupy movement, and we see it also with the AIC Act, and we also see it in outlets such as The Horn, which does need to our financial support.
You do that very well, Will. I just have to tell you.
Thank you. A movement to try to come together. I think the problem is we have been coming from diverse places. We've had environmentalists. We've had gay rights activists. We've had women's rights activists. We've had people fighting corruption. Guess what? I think we are all tied together. And one of the key problems is corruption in the system. And even the best senators, people whom, Bob, if someone could take DNA from Liz Warren and Bernie Sanders and create a child and raise up with their values, that child I would probably trust with a number of lives. But because we have been divided, we have not yet come together and found our own strength, and it takes time, and I'm afraid we will see more suffering. I'm afraid our financial house is a house of cards which one sneeze may collapse. The only comfort I have is that sometimes through crisis, we have a new birth. But sadly, most births come with pain. I mean, if it wasn't for the Great Depression, we would not have had a lot of necessary reforms. It's as if we
had gotten
a lot of lessons.
Had it not been for FDR, I think there's a possibility there would have been a revolution in the United States in the 1930s.
Yes, and we would not have known, hard to have tell if it would have been a fascist revolution or a communist revolution, but would have been a very autocratic solution. And this is my one of my great grievances with the way the GOP is going. They seem to be increasingly moving towards autocracy. We've had the word oligarchy, but let's talk about autocracy, namely one view, one central source of power, and dissent is now not only unpopular. If you disagree with, if you were to state the views of the average listener of the horn in the GOP National Convention, I had better hope that you are either Superman or the Martian Manhunter and can be utterly immune to bullets. They cannot stand the thought that others disagree. And I think we really have to find our own strength. And I think one way to do so is work where we can. If you want to work changing a political party, you can. You had a very good candidate, a Mr. Randall, who was a journalist who's running for Congress in your state. And those are the sort of people we can support. But at the same time, we also need mass movement. I think it is coming, but we have to try to make it work. There's a very old saying, it is not up to us to complete the work, but neither is it for us to lay it aside. So we can all do something. It's just that I don't blame people for despairing, because now the stakes are very high. We also have an ecosystem that is in grave jeopardy, and we have people who act as if we can continue with the way things are and not make any changes. And it is foolishness. But
I look, for instance, this conversation started with a remark I made about the Supreme Court. Even though the government is designed constitutionally to be kind of clunky, because the theory being that you don't want people just getting the reins of power and going off and changing everything every 10 or 15 years, or maybe every year and a half or something, it can and does work when things are properly constituted. And there are, I think if one of the central failings of the Constitution lies in some of the assumptions that the framers made about the future and the people who would inhabit the government. If you read the Federalist Papers, you find this sort of starry-eyed notion promulgated by James Madison, genius that he was, this starry-eyed notion about how we would all the political players would work together for the common good, and his railings against faction, and then in fairly short order he kind of gives up and realizes that faction, which is the term we would use for political parties, we're going to be a part of everyday life. What you see in that is some assumptions about human nature that just did not bear out.
For instance, there
are impeachment provisions in the Constitution. And, you know, undergirding the idea of impeachment is that there were some things out there that if done regardless of party or faction, that anybody of conscience would see it and go, nah, this is, you know, we got, or contrary-wise, thinking about the Clinton presidency, that people would never use it as a cynical tool of the rankest form of politics. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. And, for instance, I have maintained the position for quite some time now that Roberts and Alito in particular committed perjury before the Senate of the United States in their confirmation hearings. And
I have to concur.
And should be impeached upon those grounds.
Yes, unfortunately the chances of it happening are roughly the same chances of Pope John Paul II stepping off of a flying saucer in Times Square while doing an Irish jig.
I was thinking, I was thinking Will singing Hava Nagila, but you know.
He can probably, if he can do that, he's probably more talented musically than we thought.
Will, your tone of voice when you make those little quips of yours just brings it home for me. You know, I just love the dry tone, like Bob mentioned earlier.
Well, I'm a big fan of British comedians who can really do the dry tone quite well. And I think what Bob has hit upon a remarkable point, that our system is now so influenced by politics, by money, and the like, that someone who obviously perjured themselves cannot be removed. Now, mind you, if the Republicans take the Senate and keep the House, I'm pretty certain that they will try some way to impeach the president on some charge.
Benghazi.
Probably.
IRS.
Benghazi. Yes, and also go after the vice president, in which case the president, the Speaker of the House.
You know, personally, Will, I think the Republicans
let loose all the dogs of war because chaos will have been broken out.
Yeah, the only thing standing in the way of that, Will, is I think some of the right wing teabagging faction and whatnot. I think they are more disgusted by the idea of a president boner than they are by the continued idea of president not sure and, you know, vice president Joe. But yeah. the larger point here is that impeachment process is in the Constitution, not because not simply because, you know, well, you know, you got to have one of those like it was some sort of boilerplate, but rather because if you look at the Constitution as a means of preventing civil upheaval, then it takes on a completely different, there's a completely different cast about it. For instance, with impeachment, you know, the president could be, at the time the Constitution was ratified, of course, there was no term limit, so the president could be president for as long as the president could be elected to be president. And under those circumstances, you wanted a means whereby the Congress could remove him or her from office. Of course, they were presuming only hims because, you know, women weren't fit to vote. There's that democracy problem again. But they had to have some means of removing a president from office if the president became a lawbreaker. That's why the terms of impeachment are defined as high crimes and misdemeanors, not as any specific crimes themselves. That's why only one crime is defined in the Constitution, and that is treason. And so the president is at least elected. Now, consider the Supreme Court of the United States, which, of course, at the time of the ratification of the Constitution, was little more than an idea. It would take John Marshall to shape it into the force that it is. But you've got judges who are appointed for life on good behavior. Well, that good behavior is somewhat presumptuous. in that you know, we'd like to presume that they will be well behaved, but we're stuck with them till they die, unless they retire of their own volition. And in a situation like that, if you have no remedy for it, then that's another place where you can have civil disorder, chaos, revolution, atonal music, you know, whatever. And so, you know, impeachment is not there for window dressing. I mean, we're going to get, how far down the ages do you think the things like McCutcheon and the Voting Rights Act case and Citizens United, how far down the generations is that going to reverberate?
For many, because it may take a generation to turn things around. I hope not. I hope it can be done sooner, and sometimes it has been. But if you consider the fact how long it took to get women's suffrage from the Seneca Falls Conference to the passage of the amendment. That was an awfully long time, a human lifetime.
Yeah, that's a generational struggle.
Exactly, and we have to not kid ourselves. We are in for a long struggle, but we have to remember we are not alone. And I think that's one of the things that's happening these days, that we have the right trying to tell us we are just individuals, not society, not community. There's a disdain for community, and for a good reason from them, because that's the only thing that has ever stood up against those who just see themselves in their small group as the power in this nation or in this world. But we have the power, so I'd like to thank the Horn listeners for continuing to support us. Get out there, make a difference in some way, and let's remember, we're not beat yet. We're only beat when we decide we are beat.
Hey, and Bob, I got a question.
Yes, Mark.
And I beg also, have a good night.
Oh, see you, Will.
See you.
Thanks for input, Will.
You're welcome.
Is FERC registered to vote yet?
Absolutely.
Is he looking forward to it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's what I, the millennials, I mean, if they can get them to vote. I mean, I used to go to the union meetings and just hammer on the young guys to vote, and I know half of them didn't vote. Because after I know in 2008, after the election, I was on a job site, and I asked them, did you guys vote? Well, no.
And that just crawls all over you, doesn't it, Sparky?
Oh, yeah. It just
wasn't curiosity that killed.
I had a thing I did with apprentices when they did something stupid. I used to take my hard hat off and bump their hard hat with it. It kind of wakes them up.
Is that kind of like when Granny Clampett would hit Jethro with his own hat?
Oh, probably. But then the word got out, and a new apprentice come on the job and say, "Don't mess up. He'll hit you with his hard hat on your hard hat when you least expect it."
And that's no fun.
Because I always say, just think, I don't want no accidents. My biggest thing was catching him standing on the top of a ladder.
What?
Standing on the very top of a ladder where you're not supposed to stand.
Yeah.
Step ladder, where they have the little sign on the second rung.
Yeah, it says, do not stand.
No, do not stand above this step. Yeah, that was the biggest thing, one of the biggest peeves I had. I was always yelling, get a taller ladder.
It's not like there's only one, right?
Well, if they're on a 6-foot, get an 8-foot. If they're on an 8-foot, get a 10-foot. If they're on a 10-foot, get a 12-foot.
God. the fact that it's in writing there is to, do not, not, so what, was it reading optional?
Well, it's just, they just thought I wouldn't catch them, and it just, they were too lazy to go get another ladder.
Oh, God.
And think, oh, I'm not going to fall off the top of this ladder.
Oh, by the way, another topic real quick. Just as Fancy had me going with that Australian FU piece, apparently I had Robert in Australia going. He said, I used to work for the National Roads and Motorists Association. It was a good mutual organization with a long history starting in the 1920s. Back in the 1980s, they started a policy called Clean Air 2000. The idea was to clean up the air over Sydney. I could never understand this policy because the only way to achieve it was to get all the cars in Sydney off the road, something that was extremely obvious after every Easter long weekend when, for a day or two at least, the air over Sydney was clean as no one was driving anywhere. At an annual general meeting held in 2001, the policy was officially declared closed. When people asked about it, did it actually do anything, the response that it was closed. It was a good gimmick for 20 years, and that was about all. F you. I had left the organization by then. The big end of town had come in and taken it over, demutualized it, turned it into just another insurance company, and outsourced a heavy percentage of the staff. So I think the Big Coal FU ad is really a rather truthful approach to how things are done. But for a moment, they're listening, and it's just, you know, the noise. So I apologize for any angst I may have caused on Robert's part.
It was a surprise when you start listening to it, and all of a sudden that pops up.
Yeah, I know that's what makes the good stuff. You're not expecting it. That was beautiful. That deserves to get some play.
I got to step away for just a couple of minutes. Somebody else talk.
Yeah, this is there. Yeah, this is
Larry. You there?
Yeah. Tim?
Tim?
Bueller?
I'm here.
Hey, Sergi. Are you at Davis headquarters again?
No, they're closed for the holiday weekend. The test holidays. And so I was mentioning earlier when Duncan was talking about people at the work site not voting, I was saying, you know, and it's actually become a common saying for me to say this. You know, it wasn't curiosity that killed the cat; it was apathy. You know.
Yeah, because you know the cat. Well, I don't know if I want to go eat or not. Right.
You know, I mean, curiosity only makes you stronger. You know, apathy is what'll nail you.
Yeah, without a doubt.
People who just don't, you know, care about much of anything. I'm just, you know, I'm just like, well, then I really hope, you know, or I don't even use the phrase really hope. I go stronger than that. I say, you know, okay, Mr. Apathy, it's your right to be that way. Just, you know, every time I hear you complain about something, I'm going to tell you to shut up.
Right. You had a chance to do something about this or, yeah, but wait. I want to be fair. I think there are places where apathy can be quite useful. For instance, I wish the teabaggers would get apathetic.
Yes, I do. Touché. I got to give you that one.
We need a lot more teabagger apathy out there.
But to be 100% honest and real, I actually have slightly more respect for the average teabagger than I do for the average slacker. Because while the teabaggers are wrong about pretty much everything, at least, even though they are wrong, they care about something.
Yeah.
I mean, do you see the point? You know, they may be wrong, but it's like, as opposed to someone who just sits on their couch all day watching crappy shows on basic cable and playing the Xbox, not voting, not volunteering, not doing anything. It's like, yeah, I have a little bit less respect for them than I even do for the teabaggers.
Is it the stopped clock theory, Sergi, that even a teabagger's right twice a day?
Yes. Yes, I mean, I occasionally see news stories, you know, occasionally a Republican or a teabagger or whatever, they'll occasionally say something correct.
Yeah, instead of saying, yeah, you know, the sky is polka dotted, they'll say, you know, blue.
You know, I,
speaking of stupid on the wholesale level, I have a clip here that is absolutely delightful. I have to share.
Alrighty.
We had proud son of Stanford and man with perfect hair, Brian Fisher, of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, Stan. We had a clip from him last night saying that the poors should be worshiping the 1%. Yeah, to go figure how that works out with the Ten Commandments. But he's back, and he's gone out. He's playing in the wild fields of paleontology now. This is a conversation that this goon had with Carl Kirby. And if you're in the Skype chat group, there may be screaming involved, and I'll understand why. But one of my favorite Bill Hicks clips is the one where he talks about why isn't there no mention of dinosaurs in the Bible. Well, it is, after all, Good Friday. Let's check in with Brian Fisher.
And Genesis served on their board for a time, and I brought Carl on to talk about something that is a favorite topic of mine, and that is the implications of what we know about science for the issue of origins, particularly creation science versus Darwinian evolution. And just before we jump into that, you and I were talking this morning, Carl, about the Ark. We've had this movie featuring
Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe, right. Yeah. I forgot his name there for a minute. And we had the debate with Ken Ham and Bill Nye. It was very widely seen and so forth. And so the issue of how big the ark was and how many animals it could hold, and that's one of the objections that people have to the biblical account. There's no way you could have two of every species on planet Earth on board the ark.
Strap in. Response. Tennis balls.
You know, it's an interesting thing. My biggest concern is that with that movie is that now to millions of people, that is the Bible. Because they're biblically illiterate. We live in a time where our culture is biblically illiterate. And so when somebody that doesn't know the Word of God goes and watches that movie, they're not going to walk out thinking that rock monsters built the ark.
Hold on. I love it when people like this talk about biblical illiteracy, when, you know, most of the stories that come from Genesis were in a pre-literate time. Most of the stories were passed down as a matter of oral tradition. Yeah, kind of. But biblical illiteracy. See, that's the funny thing. I'm not biblically illiterate. I know lots of the stuff that's in it, and you know that's part of why it's so easy to reject, you know, because it's idiotic. But back to Carl Kirby for a sec.
God doesn't listen to people that are calling out, "Why aren't you answering me? Why aren't you answering me?" and calling out. And that Noah was an evil man, that he wanted to kill his grandchildren. I mean, and we had a stowaway on the ark. I mean, come on. So my goal in life was, look, we have got to get a generation back to the Word of God. That's our authority.
Well, everybody needs a goal in life.
Authority, that's our standard. When you start with the Word of God, it gives you different answers than what the world does. And so I tell folks, if you want to really know if all those animals could fit on the ark, you better know how to answer three questions. Number one, how big were the animals? Number two, how many of them were there? And number three, how big was the boat? Because until you know how many animals, how big they were, and how big the boat was, you can argue all day long. You can't give an answer to any of that stuff. So we did something called a series called Debunked, and because I think there's a lot of bunk in the world. Some of the bunk is you couldn't fit all the animals on the ark. So we debunked.
Yeah, you guys got that? That's bunk. You couldn't fit all of the ant. What about the animals that only existed in the Western Hemisphere? Yeah, I know.
that myth that you couldn't fit all the animals on the ark. And so instead of me, like, rattling it all off to folks, let me give it to them. If you go to rforh.com and go to the store and type in under the DVD section, downloadable DVD, Debunked Ark. Put that in your cart, check out, and when you check out...
Yeah, he's selling something. I mean, he wants a biblically literate culture, but only at $9.95 a pop, right?
Right. Get...
Thank you.
Debunked. All lowercase letters. It's yours free of charge. Five-minute video. It's fast-paced. It's animated, but it answers it.
I watched a bit of it with you today, and it goes very quickly, and it's perfect for people. Maybe you have a short attention span, or it's perfect for
people who live in bell jars at the Ripley's Believe It or Not Auditorium.
Maybe people that would just like something to digest in a hurry. Teenagers.
Yep.
It goes by quickly. A lot of images. Be good for them.
And they can take it and share it with their friends in school, because the school students are the ones that have the power to take that message in there. As an adult, we've lost that. We've lost that ability to walk into the schools and do that. So I try to equip the younger generation to walk in and show something that they're not ashamed of. They're not embarrassed by it, because it's done well and is good quality. But it's not compromising on the Word of God either. That's the key.
So how big was the ark? How many animals? And what size were they?
Well, when you look at what the Scripture teaches, and not what we see in our youth rooms many times, with the little rinky-dinky boat and the giraffe head poking up out of the chimney and all that kind of a thing going on. If you read the Scripture, you're talking
really?
About
they were roasting giraffes?
450 feet long, 75 feet wide, and 50 foot tall. That's a big old boat. That's over, you know... When you look at it by railroad stock cars and compare the ark with railroad stock cars, that's about 522 railroad stock cars. Now, I'm weird. I know that. So I started figuring it out.
You are weird.
How long? Have you ever been on the other side of the tracks and you're driving and the train comes along?
Mm-hmm.
How long of a train is 522 railroad stock cars? I did the math. 8 miles of train.
Well, you know, I can remember one time counting, because I was at a place where I worked. There was a train track right outside where we worked.
And I was just accounting, and I was ciphering, and I was doing my gazintas and my, ciphering.
And I counted one time, the longest train I ever saw was 124 cars. And you're talking about something that is 4 to 5 times that.
Absolutely. And this was not a rinky-dinky boat, brother. I mean, there's plenty of room to put those animals on there.
You can pack a lot of animals and 520 freight cars.
522, that's 8 miles worth of train. Well, how big were the animals? That's a great question. You know, I see some people that like to mock and ridicule, especially, the dinosaurs. How'd they put the big old dinosaur on there? Well, I'd suggest to you they didn't take the big old dinosaur. They would have taken the younger ones, because you think of a guy like me. If you're going to go repopulate a planet, you're not taking me with you. I'm old. My repopulating days are done. You take my son or my grandson. My grandson's a whole lot smaller than I am. You take the younger ones. And when you take the average size of all the animals that we see today, it's actually about the size of a sheep. Well, smaller than a sheep, but we increased it in the video. We increased it to the size of a sheep to make it a challenge. So how many animals the size of a sheep could fit on a boat that size? That's a good question.
How much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood? A woodchuck would chuck as much wood as a woodchuck could chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood.
May I interject?
save me, Sergi.
Oh, my stars and stripes. You would think a guy like me. Yeah, I would think a guy like you, because your family tree probably didn't fork. It's like he's probably full of bad recessive genes.
Go, man, go. So are we to understand they took dinosaur eggs and incubated them, and, you know, Mrs. Noah came down, and that, I don't know, was Mrs. Noah sitting on the eggs?
Have any of y'all read Rational Wiki's debunking of the whole Noah's Ark thing? Like, for anyone who hasn't heard of Rational Wiki, it's an awesome site, and they have an entire section full of, you know,
oh, I've got to check it out.
You know, articles that I'll post links in the Skype chat. I'll log onto the Horn chat room and post links in a minute once I'm finished explaining it. But basically, you know, one of the set, they have an entire section relating to the Noah's Ark story and just the problems with the story. Like, number one, you were mentioning made it to the Western Hemisphere. Well, what about Australia? Are you telling me Noah swam across the thousands of miles of ocean to
platypus.
Go and retrieve platypi and koalas and kangaroos and dingoes and
wallabies.
Don't forget the Tasmanian devil.
Absolutely not. And don't forget the vicious Australian funnel web spider. Those things will kill you. And you know, I mean, that Noah. Not only did he go to Australia, pick them up, manage not to get spider bitten, or you know, amphibian reptile eaten, and then he transported them back to somewhere in the Middle East, and then the boat bobbed on the water for 40 days and 40 nights or whatever, and then it came to rest, as they all tell us, on Mount Ararat, and then Noah turned them loose. And the wallabies, kangaroos, koalas, platypi, and funnel web spiders somehow managed to cross the Indian Ocean and get back to Australia where they came from in the first place. Ain't God good?
And then there's the issue of, you know, well, there's predators and prey, right? Well, you have birds on that boat, right? You have obviously have some species, especially flightless birds. Well, how did he make sure they didn't eat the insects? How did they feed all those animals? How did they water all those animals? And what about the poop? Let's not forget about that.
Oh, well, that was miraculous.
You know, I mean, there's just so many holes. I mean, it's a fun story to read, but it's you know, it's kind of like, you know, just reading any, you know, it's some fun to read. It's a fun story you tell a kid.
It's a lot more fun to tell them the story from the Epic of Gilgamesh. It's a much better story.
And speaking of Noah's Ark, you know, and I'm sorry for filibustering. This is one of my topics that just drives
no go,
me
Sergi,
nuts.
Go.
It's like, you know, there's this video game that was made for the original Nintendo Entertainment System called Bible Adventures, and one of the mini games was a Noah's Ark mini game, and it is so hilarious. There's this guy named James Rolfe, R-O-L-F-E. He plays this character called the Angry Video Game Nerd, and he does reviews in character, right? And he rants about horrible retro games. Well, that's one of the games he reviewed. That's how I originally learned about the game. And in the game, you play as Noah, who can apparently run like he's, you know, trying to, you know, he's running like he's trying to practice for the Olympics, right?
Yeah, Jesse Owens for 4,500 years ago.
Precisely. And according to this video game, Noah apparently got all the animals to the ark by lifting them and carrying them over his head, up to and including cows.
What?
No, really, huh?
Exactly, Bob. That's the
reaction. I think my brain just stopped for a minute.
Yes, I I'm going to go and retrieve that. I'm sure that everyone listening will get a kick out of this. It's a little 30-second clip from that review.
Oh, cool.
Marty is part of it.
Well, you know, Marty just pointed out, you know, what this guy, biblically illiterate versus scientifically illiterate. And Marty says, which for the most part describes the U.S. I don't know if you saw this story, Sergi, but it was out there earlier today. It turns out that out in Oklahoma, Stan, they did did some sort of a study of students in their schools. Now, remember, Oklahoma, Stan, is a godly, Bible-believing, upstanding Christian state. Well, it turns out that in testing of students before they took High School Biology 1 and after they took High School Biology 1, it turns, and this goes back to that whole scientific literacy thing that Marty was talking about a minute ago. He said, it turns out that the students having been exposed to Biology 1, knew less about evolution after Biology 1 than they knew about it before. Let's see. The researchers, Tony Yates and Edmund Merrick, tested biology teachers and students in 32 Oklahoma public schools by a survey that they called the Biological Evolution Literacy Survey. They administered the survey to the teachers first, and then they gave it twice to students, once before they took the Biology 1 course and once after they'd completed it. So, and this is not a, you know, this isn't a decimal point. This is a comma. Prior to instruction, students possessed 4,812 misconceptions about evolutionary theory. After Biology 1, they possessed 5,072. Of the 475 students surveyed, only 216 decreased the number of misconceptions they believed, as opposed to 259 who had more of them when they finished the course than before they took it. And, of course, what the researchers figured out is that, quote, teachers may serve as sources of biological evolution-related misconceptions, at the very least, propagators of existing misconceptions. Charming, huh? And then the article goes on to note that one-fourth of Oklahoma public school life science teachers put moderate to strong emphasis on creationism. Anybody want to weep?
No. I'm proud to be Bible illiterate.
Yeah, but Jesus. And on the third day, God created the Remington bolt-action rifle so man could hunt the dinosaurs and the homosexuals. Amen. I can remember when I thought that little clip from Mean Girls was funny. Now it's just true. Oh, interesting email coming in from Tim. How big was the ark? So the ark included giraffes, hippopotami, buffalo, elephants. Elephants, by the way, where did Noah put the elephant seals? The blue whale, the sperm. Well, no, they didn't have to get on the ark because, you know, they're sea creatures. Sperm whale, giant octopi, you know, the giant sea creatures. Was the ark watertight or full of salt water? Oh, did the ark include fleas, mosquitoes? Well, read your Mark Twain and you'll find out that the, I believe the tsetse fly is the most beloved creature of God's creation. Mites, ringworm, scorpions, boa constrictors, and for 40 days, who cleaned the poop? I bet you that thing stunk to high hell. Well, it would have if it weren't for the fact that God miraculously made all the animals on the ark constipated for 40 days and 40 nights. Ay, 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 ay. Ouch. And no unicorns. That's right. That's right, Lottie. No unicorns.
A boat full of constipated animals would probably blow up.
They'd probably be right cranky, don't you think? I got the clip here from Sergi. Hang on a sec. Let's see what this is. Oh, wait. We've got an ad. Of course we have an ad. There's always an ad.
First, let's do Noah's Ark. Well, there's Noah. Moves pretty fast for an old guy. The object's to get the animals in the ark. Holy shit, you just pick them up? Is that how Noah did it? He did it all by himself by picking the animals up and carrying them into the ark? Well, according to Bible Adventures, that's how it happened. So there's where you drop those fuckers off. You just bring them to the door, you let those bastards run in there. You get a checklist of all the animals you need, so it's
cows,
pretty simple.
Horses, monkeys, snakes.
Go find some more, bring them back. Fun, huh? I just can't get over that. He's an old man, and not only does he pick the animals up, he lifts them over his head.
And
it
jumps with them.
It doesn't even slow him down. How can such an old man be so strong? Have you ever tried to lift a horse? Not that easy. What the shit? Let alone a horse and an ox? Or fuck, a horse, a cow, and two oxen? What the fucking shit? Noah's so goddamn strong, he puts the Hulk to shame. And the poor creatures, they're so scared shitless, they don't even try to get away. Noah, man. Nobody fucks with him. Not even Chuck Norris. The only animals that have the balls to fight back are the pigs. Stop it, damn pig. I'm only trying to take in the ark. There's going to be a flood. What, do you want to die? All right, that's it. You're going to get it. So what do? You grab that whatever it is, and you knock that motherfucker out. Take that, bitch. Now I got you. You're going in the ark, you fucknut. I hate those pigs, but I also hate the oxen. You drop them every time you jump, so you got to keep picking them back up again. The monkeys are also pretty damn annoying. Sometimes you gotta chase them all around. What a sight. Look, an old man climbing up a tree chasing monkeys. It's quite ridiculous. You fucking monkey, get back here!
Thank you, Sergi.
I swear, after I first saw that review, I played the game, and it is just as party as you ever. It's almost as ridiculous as the story itself.
Oh, that's delightful. I can't wait to play that for Agnes and Ferg. Effin' monkey. The pig. The pig's pink, by the way, for anybody who's... Yeah.
Believe it or not, and I actually found this out from James Roth, back in those days, there were a lot of absurd... Like nowadays, consoles, Xbox One, 360, PS3, PS4, like Sony, you know, Microsoft, and Nintendo with their Wiis, they hold a pretty tight rein on who publishes games for their consoles. But back then, pretty much anyone could just make an NES game or make a Super Nintendo game or whatever. And a lot of these Christian, like, book companies decided, hey, we're gonna reach the kids nowadays. We're gonna make video games. And there's a epic crap ton of ridiculous biblical games from the 80s and 90s for the Nintendo systems especially. And that one's the most ridiculous, but there's plenty more out there.
No, that's a beautiful thing. That is absolutely a beautiful thing.
Jokes than anything.
That's the best giggle I have had all day long. No doubt.
You're welcome. You're welcome, Bob.
Oh, I owe you. I owe you. Somewhere in your future, I've got to buy you, a donut burger or something.
Chime in, Tim.
Yeah, I got a question.
Sure.
You know, since Noah is Jewish, you know, supposedly, and pigs are kosher, why do we have pigs?
That's a good question.
Well, this is pre-Ten Commandments. Noah is pre-Ten Commandments, pre-law.
Well, wouldn't they have slaughtered all the pigs regardless, though? Or wouldn't God tell them, well, it's not kosher, so...
No, he didn't, God didn't know that for yet.
Oh, but I thought he was...
This way lies madness.
But the point of having a restriction is so you can observe it, you know? I mean, it doesn't say anywhere in there, thou shalt not eat dinosaur eggs.
Ain't that the truth? Well put, Waggy. Been kind of quiet this evening, but man, when you open the mic, it's just bang, right there. Thou shalt not eat dinosaur omelets.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, delicious with sweet taters, right?
Oh,
I got to send out a copy of this YouTube video so that people can see it. It's the last Mose Allison record called The Way of the World. You all know who Mose Allison is, don't you?
Yes.
And it's called Modest Proposal. And I'm not going to talk about it because I want people to listen to it. But I think I'll just get the link and I'll copy it into the chat room because I can't play it. Well, I don't know if I can play it while chat's going on.
Just post the link, Larry.
Okay, that's what I'll do.
Cool. I'll check it out. I'm so, Sergi, I am so bookmarking this video.
Pretty much all of his series is just, you know, any, it doesn't even matter, you know, if you enjoy video games or not. Like, he does it as a comedy, right? He does all these, you know, ridiculous video game reviews as comedy, and all of, there's over 100 episodes, and all of them are priceless. Just, anyone who is interested is the angry video game nerd. James Rolfe is his real name. It's a character he plays. So far, I think there's a bit shy of 120 episodes, and all of them are hilarious.
Well, God, this one's been viewed 6,985,857 times.
Yes, he is. He's been doing this since 2006, and he's extremely popular for it. You know, because I mean, he's hilarious.
And as usual, come for the hilarity, stay for the comments.
Okay, so I posted it, so it's there. So if you think you can use it, we'll use it. All right, then.
Well, Devin has joined us.
Okay. So, Sergi, where can I get whatever it was you were playing? Is that a video you sent out?
It's in the chat.
Okay.
Chat, Larry.
Thank you.
Just scroll back up.
Thank you.
Greetings, Devin.
Yeah. So the dinosaur eggs, you know, they go good with the giant alien starch pods, you know, those things from Idaho.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, you know, they're supposed to be potatoes, but they...
we know better.
They're more the size of dinosaur eggs. And, you know, you fry all that up in the dino lard. And...
Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper? Yum, yum, under tooled leather.
Oh, man. Sergi, you tortured me.
I have an appreciation for Mr. Rolfe. He's a great comedian.
Oh, the fact that Noah is the same size as the oxen. Yeah, maybe that explains the guy talking to Brian Fisher there. Maybe that's what this is all about. Maybe that's where he got the idea. Oh, we're just going to send the little oxen, the ones that are small enough for Noah to carry aboard.
I couldn't believe my eyes when I first. That was actually the first one of his videos that I ever saw. And I mean, it's not the extent of it. Like, there is another variation on that story that was adopted into a ridiculous video game. Bob, are you familiar with Doom?
Oh, yes.
Well, there was a bootleg ripoff of Doom where you played as Noah.
No.
And
Stop it. Enough is enough, Sergi.
He actually did, like, later on in that same video, it's a review of it, where he, like, you play as Noah, and all the animals on the ark have gone crazy and are trying to murder you.
What the...
You don't even use it, because obviously they did stay historically accurate. It's not like he's holding a gun, like a modern day gun. He uses a slingshot to knock them out with rocks.
This has been a good chat today. We've had Willow, we've had Sergi. It's been really good. It's been really fun.
I feel like I need a Thorazine dart in the neck, though. I mean, ow.
Well, doesn't this remind you of your time at WVU?
Well, maybe the parts where the walls were kind of breathing a little bit. Yeah, but...
I guess somebody would play this game, after taking a bunch of bunch of LSD, and then they'd go out and burn a couch, you know.
Yeah, right. You know, the Paisley Snow, that kind of thing. That's too good. That's just too good. But for God's sakes, don't let any Oklahoma biology teachers or biology students hear this. They'll, you know, they'll think it's real.
It seems, Bob, that, you know, you can learn the biology, but then if they pollute it with all this creation stuff, then that stuff takes over. Or, you know, people, it's weird. If that's what you were talking about Oklahoma high schools, and how is that they get away with teaching creation theory in a biology class? Doesn't make any sense.
Well, because it's Oklahoma, Larry.
Yeah,
I mean the same would apply to Alabama.
Yeah,
or South Carolina, because you know Jesus may destroy them with this sacred death ray of love. If evolutionary science is taught to their children.
Oh, don't they teach genetics and whatever else and cell biology and microbiology? Well, I don't know. I didn't take high school biology.
Well, it's yeah, but it's
look, they don't even teach don't fuck your cousin. So you know it's
Jesus.
Okay, all right. I'll just go look at the curriculum.
Yeah.
yeah, Larry noped out on that line, I think.
Yeah. By the way, on the other, okay, so it's dangerous for people to, I mean, very tiny dinosaurs were on the ark. Meanwhile, we travel across the country to New Jersey, where a woman seeking to get a vanity plate that was spelled the numeral eight T-H-E-I-S-T, you know, atheist, okay? The state of New Jersey turned her down and said she could not have it because it was deemed objectionable. Now, because atheists are generally pretty intelligent people, she then ran a little bit of a thought experiment. And so she tried to register a vanity plate reading B-A-P-T-I-S-T, Baptist. And the state said, cool.
Well, if they want to get on that level, can we ban Chris Christie? I find the fact he eclipses the sun objectionable.
Oh, you're on a roll tonight.
Yeah, I was going to say there is a dinosaur in New Jersey that blocks a bridge too. So,
I just took a peek at a syllabus for a high school biology class in Oklahoma. And the syllabus, just briefly, it doesn't even mention anything about creation theory at all. So they must be doing, you know, so, you know, I didn't see it there, but it, you know, they didn't mention it. So I don't know.
Yeah, but each district is different, you see. There may be a state syllabus, but there's also a district syllabus, which varies from every school. And then there's, of course, in a lot of places, you know, if you actually teach that syllabus that you're supposed to teach for the state, you don't have a job anymore.
That's about the size of it, yeah.
And people show up and throw rocks through your windows and burn crosses in your yard and, you know, all that stuff.
By the way, I was mistaken earlier. Noah does not shoot rocks. He shoots hunks of food. not rocks.
No, so stop. No, wait.
He shot hunks of food so hard they knocked the animals out. I just rewatched
it. So what, he's slingshotting them with fried chicken and broccoli?
But the game just calls it food. And, you know, food is the equivalent of bullets, you know, in the real Doom game, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yep.
Food is power.
He shoots the food so hard, he knocks the animals out.
If it's those old seafaring biscuits, then I would say yes.
Oh, you mean a heart attack? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, or maybe a corn, maybe a dried out corn dodger.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've eaten replica heart attack before. Ugh.
My wife makes these little cornbread biscuits. They're just about the size of a half dollar. I mean, round. And my mom used to call them horse doobers.
They sound good, though.
Yeah, they're just a real small cornbread biscuit thing. I mean, it's just... One of them are the little baking pans that are about inch and a half, 2 inches round. Like little mini corn cupcakes or something, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those mini muffin pans, the little tiny ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good. Hey, here's a little fun since we're winding down the program. And again, I want to extend thanks this evening to to Michael. Michael helped us out with 2/3 of the evening's fundraising goal, and we've got another $50 to go for this particular Friday. So thank you very much, Michael. And I hope you get some company along the way. Since we are winding down, I just had to share this. This is the we were talking about Oklahoma, so let's go up to Nebraska for a minute because they've got some fun Lulus too. There's a state senator in Nebraska by the name of Beau McCoy, B-E-A-U, Beau. Kind of like how they spell go in Louisiana, G-E-A-U-X, as in go Tigers. Beau McCoy is running for re-election to the state senate of Nebraska, and he knows how to really bring in that Obama vote. Let's go to the audio.
More Obamacare in Nebraska? That's the last thing we need. I'm Beau McCoy.
Okay, now wait a minute, because this is kind of visual. He's standing by, okay, so you hear the ding, ding, ling, ding, 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 you know, kind of, what?
That's some kind of mouth harp?
Yeah, that's what it is, a mouth harp, you know, wang, lang, lang, ding. So he's standing by. And he says that Nebraska doesn't need more Obamacare, and then slaps an Obama bobblehead doll. Man, I tell you what, they know how to define masculinity in Nebraska. Yeah, really.
More Obamacare in Nebraska? That's the last thing we need. I'm Beau McCoy. When Barack Obama tried bullying Nebraska into expanding Obamacare, I pushed back, standing with Governor Heineman, to stop Obama from blowing a hole in our budget and reducing funding for education.
Now, see, this guy's apparently dumber than a turnip, because the Medicaid expansion, Nebraska had no choice in the for-profit part of the Affordable Care Act. But the funny thing about the Medicaid expansion is that was free money for the states. Absolutely free, no strings attached. So this is what?
I'm sure Jamie Heineman of the Mythbusters absolutely loves sharing the last name with that goober.
Oh, my God.
I'm Beau McCoy. As governor, I'll fight just as hard to hold the line on spending, and I'll always stand up for Nebraska.
Because he has a horse. And he can slap around a bobblehead doll.
Yeah, this reminds me of, something that connects with your experience at Harvard on the Mon with the walls breathing. I think we've figured out what is in those little wafers that they pass out on Sunday.
Wow.
Oh, I think we got Larry this time. Yes.
Okay. Okay. That's funny.
Reel it in, Larry.
Well, nobody's ever heard me laugh on internet radio before. Help.
Yeah, it's going to become infectious in a minute.
Funny. Anyway, what's that?
What I don't understand. They're in the Bible Belt. They're dropping stamps like the Postmaster General, apparently.
Yeah. I don't understand why these states don't want the Medicaid expansion. They only have to pay they only have to pay 10% of the bill.
Well, for the first 3 years, Larry, they don't have to pay any percent.
So why are they being such buttheads? I'm sorry, or asshats, or whatever term you want to use.
Because the fact of the matter is, if you expand Medicaid and people start experiencing what universal single-payer health care can be,
they're going to want it.
They're going to want it. I mean, the right wing is losing their mind right now because the sign-ups for the Affordable Care Act are now far in excess of even the goals that they set for themselves. And so the right winger, it's just smoke and mirrors. Those aren't real Americans getting real health care, because Jesus. But they are. The numbers are real. The thing is, budget busting Obamacare. How is free money a budget buster? Now, granted, in 3 years' time, what the Affordable Care Act says is that after the first 3 years, the state contribution for the Medicaid expansion can be as high as 10%. It never goes higher than 10%, and it's entirely possible it could be less than 10%.
Well, all these states have to do now, I know I'm sounding stupid, all these states have to do is raise taxes on some corporate folks, and then they wouldn't have to worry about not having enough money. From what I was listening to Richard D. Wolf, who's an economist, and he was saying that when governments need money, they borrow, and they borrow from corporations and from rich folks. So when they borrow and they have to pay it back, they pay it back, but they also pay it back with interest. So it behooves these corporations and right wingers to encourage governments to borrow because they ultimately make out like bandits at the other end.
Well, sure they do. Sure they do. I mean, Agnes and I were walking through a Capitol Hill neighborhood yesterday, and I pointed out, all the houses back here are, roughly 1880, 1890, 1900. And what Capitol Hill is the realization that struck people after the Civil War that debt can actually be a positive thing for a government because it enables people to do things. And so the building boom that took place on Capitol Hill, the building programs governmentally that happen in the wake of the Civil War are all a function of the fact that the federal government figured out in the Civil War that it could go into debt and that debt would be a net good thing, as yeah. opposed to these right-wing political infants who run around saying, well, what about the deficit? And what about the debt? And that Obama's, he put us in $1 trillion. Well, never mind the fact that we spent most of the trillions of debt running a war on credit cards in Iraq that George Bush started. But never mind. But they just show their ignorance out of that.
Well, okay. All right. Well, they complain about government borrowing, but yet they it goes on, and it ultimately is not good for the, not good for the country, but it's good for the bankers, and it's also good for the wealthy financiers who loan the money out. So,
right.
They're trying to have it every which way. I don't know. Maybe I'm not making sense.
No, you make plenty of sense.
Okay.
It's absolutely sensible. But, guys, it is... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just got a quick thought. All you got to do is think about back to the Depression. The government had to spend money to bring us out of the Depression.
Yeah.
I mean, projects that they built generated billions of dollars in revenue and infrastructure and people building stuff and investment begets more money.
Precisely. I mean, and of course, those are elements of Keynesian economics,
as long as the government, uses the, if it goes into debt and then the debt ultimately brings back, like what Duncan was saying, brings back more, in return, then it's healthy. It's only healthy. It's only unhealthy when, or not very healthy, if the government or other people take the investment money and fritter it away, like what was happening with the speculation boom and the investment bankers were wasting all that money on projects that didn't bring anything back.
Precisely. Exactly.
You know?
Well, guys, I got to get out of here. It is it's that time of the evening. Thank you for a wonderful conversation this evening. And thank you, Sparky, for moderating the group for these 3 days of broadcast here. I really appreciate it. It makes things a lot easier when I otherwise don't have the phones available. So thanks to the whole Skype group. If you celebrate Easter, I hope you have a happy one. If you celebrate something else, have a happy one of that. And if you don't celebrate anything at all, well, enjoy the daylights out of that too, one and all. Thanks, Sergi. Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Sparky. Thanks, Devin. Thanks, Waggy. Thank you, Larry. It was great to hear you laugh. And thank you, Fritz. Everybody have a great weekend. And get out and enjoy the music, Fritz. I mean, I know you're just itching to. Or not.
Well, they'd have to bring something else in.
Yeah, I get it. Well, y'all have a good evening, and I trust the Skype group will continue after midnight Eastern time.
Oh yes.
Okay.
Haven't missed a Friday night in 6 years.
And you're invited, Bob.
All right, we'll see what's going on about that time. You guys have a wonderful evening, and I guess we'll have more Ann Monday from the home studios by the time we get back. Y'all take care.
Okay, have a safe trip home, Bob.
All right, thanks, you guys.
Bye, Bob.
Bye now. Sayonara. Tim, take care. And so we find ourselves at the end of the broadcast week. Thank you for everyone who supports this effort, this program. Thank you for all the support over the course of the week. Thank you, Dr. Allen. Thank you, Michael. Thank you to all the all of you who participate via PayPal or traditional mail to keep the program going. Thank you, Kathleen. Thank you, Jan and Jerry. Thank you, Asa. Thank you, Henry. Thank you, Thomas. This is how we keep it all going. And it really is inspiring to see that something like this can be maintained for almost 10 years' time, which is amazing. Rick Smith is next, and well, beyond that, just like I said, have a wonderful weekend. We'll forego the music. Take care. Bye now.